This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. I'm Meera Sivasothi and it is our monthly open clinic segment. What does that mean? Well, that means that we have a doctor in the studio and you can call and ask him any question you want. And in the studio today with us is Dr. Kent Wu, a consultant allergist and immunologist. If you have a question for him, you can call us on 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us on BFM Radio. Any question you want to ask, call us right now. Dr. Kent, thank you for coming. It's been ages since we actually had you on the show.
Yes, I think it's been about a few years already, and I was in the old studio, and this new studio looks really, really good. It's a pleasure.
It is swanky, isn't it, compared to the old one? Okay, let's go through allergies, Dr. Ken. I think sometimes when we try and figure out what an allergy actually is, it's just defined as an inappropriate immune response to an otherwise harmless substance in the environment, which almost sounds like an autoimmune reaction. Am I correct when I say that?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Basically, what an allergic reaction, we call it hypersensitivity. So that means normally you shouldn't react in such a way. And the immune system in this allergic reaction has identified that allergen as something foreign and something that is needed to be responded to immediately. And that's why we get this allergic reaction. The severe reactions is called anaphylaxis, and that can lead to fatality. So food allergy is one of the most interesting form of allergies nowadays. We're seeing severe reactions that can lead to anaphylaxis and fatality. And food is supposed to be pleasurable, something you're supposed to eat and enjoy, and now suddenly it can kill you. So allergies is nothing to be sneezed at. We like to say that, but it's something serious.
But are we ever born with an allergy?
Oh, that is a very, very difficult question to answer. The reason why is, as science progress, we are learning more and more that the fetus, while you are actually in your mother's womb, your immune system is actually communicating with the outside world through your mother's immune system. So as science progresses, we're finding that the immune system response actually begins before you were born. Before that, we thought that when you were in the mother's womb, you are insulated and you're protected. But now we found that the baby actually produces allergic antibodies through the mother's immune system's response to the child. So when you are born, you can get an allergic reaction, much to everyone's surprise. So more and more data is coming out on that.
To say that you can be born with an allergy.
Absolutely.
It wasn't the case in the past.
In the past, we didn't believe that that was possible, but now we're changing our tune.
Okay. So there are many types of allergies, as you said. Food allergy being the most common, would you say?
Yes, it is becoming more common, but the most common is actually allergic rhinitis, but people tend to play that down because it's not fatal. It's a little bit inconvenient, and everyone wants to play up food allergy. In terms of allergic rhinitis, based on data we have on Malaysia, about 15 to 20% of our Malaysian population will have allergic rhinitis. So that's quite high. I mean, it's 1 out of 5.
Do we know why?
We called it the hygiene hypothesis.
Yeah, this for allergic rhinitis.
Yes.
Not the food allergy.
We think it starts with eczema, then it goes to food allergy, then allergic rhinitis and asthma, what we call the allergic march. And one thing leads to the other. So you can have allergic rhinitis and then develop asthma after that, or you can have eczema first and then you get the food allergy closely related to that. So it might not follow a particular pathway, but we know that once you're allergic, you're at a higher chance of developing further allergies.
And when we talk about the hygiene hypothesis, it just means that we all have to start playing with dirt.
Well, that was what we did. I mean, I did that. I was in the rivers. I was climbing trees. And that was not too long ago. At least I don't think so. And what happened then was that we, based on current studies, by having interaction with the natural environment, you're actually picking up the microbes, the microbiome in the natural environment, and the diversity of that microbiome interacts with our immune system. So that makes our immune system less sensitive. If we stay indoors all the time, we're using hand sanitizers, everything has to be super clean. Our immune system doesn't know what's good or bad. And everything it sees, it overreacts. And that's what we think is the cause for allergies.
Really? Well, not the fact that we have an unhealthy gut microbiome?
Well, we
do. Because there's so much talk about gut microbiome today, right?
Oh, yes. We're
not eating healthy. We're not feeding our gut microbiome the right food, fiber, that sort of thing. So already, it's a bit of a mess.
Absolutely.
So which one is worse? Should we be playing with dirt, or do we just fix the gut microbiome?
Well, that's one of the things. Like when you play with dirt, the bacteria actually goes on your skin. And we like to put things in our mouth. And we touch things everywhere. So it starts with the microbiome on the skin. And that microbiome will swallow it. And then it actually ends up in our gut. It might not actually stay in our gut, but the process of it being processed in the gut changes the natural habitat, the normal, we call it symbiosis, and it changes it to a more tolerant state. So for example, if you're not playing in the dirt outside, you're always indoors, you're always using hand sanitizers, so your microbiome diversity in your gut decreases, and they've measured that in the stool. Well, it's children that play outside, they eat food that falls on the ground. The other one is like if the parents practice pre-mastication, which is the process of chewing food in their parents' mouth and then feeding it to the baby directly, like a bird, transfers the bacteria from the mom to the child. And that actually reduces allergies. Surprise, surprise. They did a study.
My grandmother did that. Yes. You know how they blow and then they stick the tongue and on the food and, oh yeah, it's warm enough, now stick it in your mouth. And
yes,
there you go.
Yeah.
I can't believe this.
It happened to me too. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
But as an adult, if you don't have a healthy gut microbiome and you're doing this to the child, isn't that not the best thing either?
Well, we can only go by studies. We haven't done the studies comparing an allergic parent versus a non-allergic parent. But in general, if you do that, and the best study that investigated that was parents that had children. And you know, children, they use the pacifier to keep them happy.
Yes.
And they separated the parents between those where the pacifier drops on the ground.
Yes.
Right? So you have two types of parents. One that is OCD and they immediately sterilize the pacifier.
Or they just swap. They've already got a sterilized one in the bag.
Or the other one, the parents would just suck on it and just pop it right back in the baby's mouth, right? And guess which baby had the less form of allergy? It's the baby where the parents were lazy, where they just sucked on it and just pop it in the baby's mouth.
They weren't lazy, Dr. Kent. They were
clever.
They were just chill about it. They aren't hung up about cleanliness.
So you see, and then that comes to the next point is like, why does the eldest child, the first child, usually has the most allergies? And that's because the parents are a little bit more attentive, more scared, more OCD in terms of cleanliness. And the eldest child tends to get the most form of allergies compared to the second and third.
Okay, all right. So there's a lot of information so far. But do you think, I was reading one article where a doctor in the UK said the food allergies back in the day was unheard of. Do you think that was just lack of awareness, or has something drastically happened?
Oh, certainly something has drastically happened.
I mean, they were actually unheard of?
Yes, it was unheard of. I mean, if you speak about peanut allergy, 30 years ago, if you were in Malaysia and you say you had peanut allergy, everyone would thought you're crazy.
Absolutely. How do you eat satay?
Oh, yes. But now, I'm actually seeing children with peanut allergy. And not only peanut allergy, in fact, the cow milk allergy is our number one allergen here in Malaysia. And they start as early as 2 months old. So this was unheard of. It's not that we didn't know or it never we didn't know how to diagnose that. It's just that it's happening. So the food allergy wave was the last wave of the allergic march, we thought. But now there's new allergic waves that's coming. One of them is coming is eosinophilic esophagitis.
What is that?
Well, if you think of eczema as an allergic reaction on the skin, mm-hmm. think of it happening in the esophagus, which is the tube that transports food into the stomach. And it's actually closely associated with food allergy. And these children or adults that eats the offending food, they'll get esophageal spasms, they have difficulty in swallowing, and previously we would just say, oh, you're just having a bad reflux, yep. nothing to worry about. The docs will, the GI docs will do the scope, and they'll say, well, we don't really see anything. But now, when you do biopsy that means you take a piece of the tissue out, and you look under the microscope, and you're seeing allergic inflammation. And this was unheard of about 15 years ago either. And now we're seeing it. And originally reported in Western literature, we're seeing it in Malaysia now. So fascinating. We're seeing new forms of allergies all the time.
In the esophagus. How do you manage that?
Oh, it's extremely difficult because first of all, you've got to get a proper diagnosis. So you've got to see the gastrointestinal doctor and he's got to believe you first and then he does the scope. Because your symptoms are really nonspecific. And a lot of people think it's probably your mind, you know. You've been eating everything fine. Why would you get this problem? So you got to have a person who takes you seriously. And then they do the scope. And then even if they don't see anything, they got to biopsy it. And it's a pathological report that makes you look further.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Laura, you have a question. Go ahead, Laura.
Hi, yeah. Hi, Dr. Chen. My name is Laura. I would like to know. So basically, I wasn't allergic to horses until I was 22 years old. So, and prior to that, I had no allergies to animals at all. So I was just curious as to what happened in the human body as they grow, where they begin to develop allergies that they were not to things or food or animals that, you know, they were never allergic to before.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Laura. Dr. Ken.
Thank you, Laura, for the question. So she was previously not allergic to horses, and then suddenly she started developing allergies to horses. So what happened is this. Not all the time this phenomenon will happen. Normally, you have to be exposed to the allergen. So I would assume that in her situation was previously she wasn't exposed to horse. And maybe she decided to take up horse riding or got exposed to horses in a continuous fashion. But in the development of allergies, very interesting. This is where it makes a difference. If you are exposed to doses, once in a while, that means you're not every day being exposed to the allergen. That means you go to see the horse or you're exposed to the horse maybe once a month or once a week. You have a higher chance of developing allergy to that allergen as opposed to being exposed to the horse every day for a few hours every day. Then your immune system tends to want to ignore that mm-hmm. because you're seeing it all the time. Whereas you're seeing it intermittently, it's kind of like a itch, you know, it keeps on itching and you want to scratch at it and cause the allergic inflammation. So I assume in that situation, she was not exposed to horse and she got exposed to horse intermittently. The immune system recognized that as foreign and then started developing reaction to it.
What about the other way around? Say you have allergies as a child and then you grow out of it. What happens? What's happening in that process?
Well, that we are trying to figure out because that would be the key for everything in terms of allergy management. We have children that might be allergic to like cow milk or egg, and they kind of outgrow that as they progress. we know the biochemical markers. That means you do the blood test and it'll show like, oh, these are the markers that show that you're outgrowing this food allergy. But what actually makes it happen? How does it actually occur? Why does the immune system that was previously angry now decide that
this is my friend?
Now it's delicious. We're going to have fried eggs for dinner. So we don't know. We just know that the marker. And I think the research is rapidly developing in that. And I think we'll get an answer. Stay tuned. So, I'll keep you updated every few years to let you know if there's any changes in our research.
Wonderful. We'll come back and find out more about allergies. In the studio with me, Dr. Kent Fu, consultant allergist and immunologist. It's our monthly open clinic segment, so you can call and ask us any question you want. The number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up, we'll discuss, some anaphylactic shock due to food allergies. A lot of it has come out of the UK recently, where, someone just threw cheese at his skin. On his skin, he developed a reaction and he passed on. There was another one, that is a child who consumed a baguette with sesame seeds in it, and she passed on because it was not written on the labels. Those are pretty tragic deaths. That's the extreme of allergies. But there are many types, as you said, Dr. Ken, food, rhinitis, eczema, asthma. We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Kent Fu, consultant, allergist and immunologist, in the studio with us. It's our monthly open clinic segment where you can get our doctors to address your health concerns. So allergies, it's something I think many of us, as you said, 15 to 20% have allergic rhinitis. It's one in five of us, Dr. Ken. I can't imagine the rest, right? Asthma and food allergies and all of that. If you have a question, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Ryan has a question for us. Ryan?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm one of your 20% with the allergic rhinitis.
Okay.
So basically, I get it like every 1 or 2 weeks. And every time I do some cleaning and every time I get off the plane. So what is the good way to manage it or treat it?
Thank you.
I've tried many things. Been to the doctor. They gave me the nasal spray. Tried it for a couple months. Doesn't work. Then I tried the Depot and doesn't work. So it's so bad that I need to carry a Clarinase all the time with me. Like every 2 weeks, I need to pop one. So we appreciate any advice. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Go ahead, Dr. Ken.
So for Ryan, he is complaining of nasal allergic rhinitis symptoms, and he's identified some of his triggers, particularly when he cleans his house. And usually for Malaysians, our number one allergen supreme for allergic rhinitis and asthma is house dust mites. So most likely, as he's cleaning his house, the dust is flying everywhere and he's just breathing in these dust mites. And these dust mites love hot and humid environments. That's why Malaysia, it's a paradise for dust mites. And these dust mites, what they do is they eat our skin. And they're microscopic, so you can't see them and you won't get grossed and get worried about them because you can't see them. But they actually, if you followed our grandmothers last time, they would bring our pillows outside during the afternoon and they'll hit it with the rotan and you can see the dust flying everywhere.
And they use cotton pillows.
Yes. And those dust that's flying everywhere is just not dust. Those are dust mites. And our grandmothers knew it, that if you do that all the time, you sleep better and you don't have nasal allergy symptoms early in the morning. So what we're seeing with Ryan is whenever he does that cleaning, he's actually being exposed to a huge, massive dose of dust mites when he does the cleaning. So I think what you need to do is you need to clean your bed sheets, change them once a week, change your pillow covers, use those dust mite proof covers, but you still need to clean them once a week. That'll reduce your exposure to the dust mites. And one thing interesting he was saying was that every time he steps out of the plane, he will get a bout of allergic symptoms in his nose. And that's what we call vasomotor rhinitis. What has happened is that he's got inflammation in his nose. And when he flies, there's a change in air humidity, from humid to less humid to humid again, change in air pressure. And what that happens is the nose lining gets irritated. The neurons start firing and say, hey, we're irritated, let's sneeze, let's produce mucus because we're irritated. And that's why he gets the symptoms. So the underlying cause, I think, in his situation is most likely the dust mites, and he's getting all these secondary symptoms. His dilemma is, well, doctor, I've tried everything. What do you have for me, right? Well, that's the good news. Our treatment is getting better. So there are new sprays out there and pills that are more effective and reduce symptoms. But that's not what he's really looking for. What he's looking for is a long-term solution for his issues. So for allergy sufferers out there, well, get your ears tuned in carefully, because I'm going to tell you what we can do. There's this thing called allergen-specific immunotherapy. What it is the introduction of the allergen to your immune system in a constant high-dose fashion. And what it does is it slowly desensitizes your immune system. And the best thing about it, it can give about a possibility of cure. What do I mean by that? By giving this allergen for a long time, your immune system gradually ignores this allergen and it starts a tolerant response. What normal people do, they become tolerant to the allergen.
But do you need to know what you're allergic to?
Absolutely. So what you need to do is you need to get proper allergy testing. So to find out what you're allergic to, for example, if you're allergic to cat and you are being treated for dust mite, it doesn't work. So it's allergen specific. So if you're allergic to cat, you got to get treated for the cat allergen. You're allergic to dust mite allergen, you got to be treated to the dust mite allergen. It's costly, so it's not something you can just walk in the pharmacy or go into your doctor and just get the treatment. So you got to get a proper diagnosis first. And it doesn't work immediately, see, because your immune system takes time to respond. So you need at least 1 year of treatment before you start seeing effectiveness. And for long-term benefits, because what's the point in doing this if it doesn't help you long-term? So you treat yourself with this immunotherapy usually for about 3 to 5 years. And after that, you stop. And the benefits you get are pretty much lifelong.
What are the risks?
The risks are there.
What if the body completely overreacts?
Well,
this?
Yes. There are two forms right now. One is by injection. That's actually 100 years old, this treatment. So more than 100, actually. That's the one with the most reaction. If you get injection, and sometimes you can get allergic reaction. So therefore, you must get it done in a doctor's office. And when you get it done in doctor's office, you don't run away. You have to sit there for 30 minutes. In case you have allergic reaction, they'll give you the antidote. The new therapy that just came in, that's called sublingual immunotherapy. And if you Google that, I'm sure everyone is doing that right now. You Google that, that's actually new on the market, but it's not actually that new. It's about a 20, 30-year-old technique. First developed in Europe, and now it's being perfected, and now it's available in Malaysia. And you put these allergens under your tongue, and there's these immune cells under the tongue that will pick up this allergen, and it will help educate your immune system not to be allergic.
Okay.
So it's very fascinating. So please get proper diagnosis. There is a hope for allergy sufferers out there.
For those of us who cannot afford it. What is Ryan's option if Ryan can't do 3 to 5 years?
Well, environmental control. So once you get the proper diagnosis of what you're allergic to, if you do strict environmental control, like what I was saying, house dust mite control, once a week you wash, you change your bed sheets, you can actually reduce your symptoms by 50%. And for most people, that is good enough without the need for medicines. So that is a very good option. Or, for example, if you're allergic to your pet, well, I can't tell you not to have your pet. So I'll tell you to restrict your contact. Or if you get contact with your pet, go straight shower, change your clothes, because the allergen sticks to you and you're breathing in all the time. And don't let the pet into your bedroom.
I was just thinking, I mean, if you have the pet for the long term, will your system not slowly become immune to it?
Well,
or accept it as this is no longer the enemy?
Well, we wish, but actually it happens if you're born into a house containing a pet. So if, for example, when you're born into a house with a dog or a cat, you actually have a less chance of allergies compared to where you're born into a house without any pets. Because why? Pets have allergens and they have bacteria and you're exposed to it, and then that changes your immune system. So you're not going to be responding to the allergen.
So would you say the first couple of days or months of a child coming into this world is crucial to immune system, to the child's immune system, and the development of allergies? What, first 1,000 days? First how many days?
That's absolutely a good point. The data shows that we have a window of opportunity where you can manipulate the immune system naturally. And the data suggests it's the first year of life. Past the first year of life is a little bit more difficult. There is some statistical difference, but not really as significant as the first year of life.
Okay, so first 1 year, throw them into all sorts of situations. Dirt is what we're talking about.
Dirt, have pets, let them, eat from
drop
your mouth.
Drop the pacifier and pick it up and put it straight into your mouth.
Absolutely.
Don't, you can attempt blow, that's all right, but... I remember the blowing thing. I could never understand it. Emmett on the line. Emmett, you have a question. Hi,
hello,
Emmett.
Hello, doctor.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
So I'm very allergic to cats, and it so happens that my aunts and uncles, they own many cats in their house. My question is, how useful is it to pre-medicate with antihistamines before I enter an environment where I can expect allergies?
Okay, so Emmett, these cats are not yours. It's just your aunts and uncles. You come in contact with them every now and again.
Right, when I go to their houses and whatnot.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Ken?
Thank you.
So for those allergy sufferers, for allergic rhinitis or asthma, where you know you're allergic to something and you are in contact with it intermittently, how do you prepare yourself for the war, so to speak? So what you do is we do what we call pre-medication. So before you go to be exposed to the allergen that's triggering your allergies, you got to take the medicines. For antihistamines, you got to take it at least 1 hour beforehand. It doesn't make sense if you take it like 1 second before or a few minutes before. It needs time for the medication to get absorbed. That is for mild symptoms. For example, if you go to your uncle's house with a cat and all you do is just a little bit of itchy eyes, antihistamine works. But you have more severe symptoms. For example, you'll have wheezing or coughing or you itch everywhere. Antihistamines will not work. You need additional medication. So if you are asthmatic, you have to start yourself on puffer. And for puffers, you want to start yourself a few days beforehand. And very important, while you're being exposed to the allergen, right, you're going to get the symptoms. And most people, when they step away from the situation, be like, okay, you know, it was just for 1 day. The next day, I don't have to take the medications. But actually, no, you had to take for at least a few days after the exposure. Because why? There's always an underlying small allergic reaction that you're not aware of. So what you want to do is you take 1 hour before, if it's a mild symptoms, antihistamines. If it's severe symptoms, you'll take a few medicines few days before, and then you want to continue that for around 4 or 5 days after the exposure. Very important, after the exposure, for example, you visited your uncle and aunt and you were there for the whole afternoon. After that exposure, you got to take a shower and you got to clean your clothes. You got to take your clothes off and put on new fresh pair of clothes, because otherwise the allergen is sticking onto your skin and hair and you're still breathing it in.
Okay. All right. Very, very important advice there. One question before we go to a market update. Daniel is asking, will the usage of antibiotics during infancy after the natural flora in the baby's intestinal tract be the root cause of allergies?
Well, that is a good question. It is one of the risk factors, but it's not the only risk factors. So what happens is like this. If you compare children that were born normally versus through caesarean section, and you compare the flora, the gut flora of these two children, you'll notice that the children that were born normally as opposed to caesarean section, their gut microbiome is quite different. But over time, after about a year, they both equalize. So it's that early stage where you have that exposure to the proper microbes that programs your immune system. And when they did research on these children that were exposed to antibiotics, when you were given the antibiotics, the microbiome changes rapidly. But it goes back to normal within 1 to 2 weeks. So this gut microbiome that is part of your signature, it can be temporarily altered by antibiotics. But it goes back to its normal natural state, whatever that natural is, we're not sure. So the question is, if you take antibiotics, just that one dose, is it enough of a trigger that will send your immune system to say, oh, we're going to go get allergies? We're not really sure on that. And the reason why I say that is the data is not quite clear. We do know that overuse of antibiotics unnecessarily can lead to development of allergies, but use of antibiotics appropriately hasn't been shown.
And hey, if you need it, you need it.
Absolutely. So my advice to listeners out there is, you know, if you need the antibiotics, take it. But if you don't need the antibiotics, don't request for it. I have patients, they pester their doctors, can I have antibiotics? It's just a viral infection. Antibiotics don't work. So you keep on pestering, or if you don't get what you want from this doctor, you go to another doctor. You know, my advice is like this. Don't take antibiotics unnecessarily. But if your doctor thinks that you need the antibiotics, do take it. And the risk to your microbiome is only temporarily.
Okay.
And you will recover.
This is our open monthly clinic segment with Dr. Kent Wu. He's an allergist and immunologist. We are discussing allergies today. So if you have a question for him, call us at 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. When we come back, we'll take Najman's question on the line. Najman, just hang in there. We'll be back right after the market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon in our Healthy Living segment today. It is our monthly open clinic segment. And if you have a question for Dr. Kent Wu, who's our consultant allergist and immunologist today, you can give us a call on 7733-2900. You can just WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Najman, you have a question.
Hi, yes. So my question is that recently in the past 3-4 weeks, my wife has been having these allergic reactions where she will have hives and will just get itchy all over the body. Thing is, she hasn't had this issue any time in the past, and it's rising up in the past 3-4 weeks. We haven't changed anything aside from basically we just started fasting for Ramadan, and we have cats at home. We didn't change our diets, and just curious as to what would trigger it.
Yeah, sure. Just hold on, Najman. Dr. Kent, do you have any question for him?
Yes. How often will you have this hives attack? It will be like one time a day?
Usually it's at night. It's usually just once a day, yeah. At night or early in the morning.
And do you take any medicines for this?
Oh, yes. I usually give her antihistamines, and that works. That after half an hour, she'll feel a reduction in that attack.
Is this the first time she ever had this ever?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
And this happens every day, Najman?
Almost. Almost every day nowadays, yeah.
Okay.
We tried changing bed sheets. We tried not having too much contact with the cats. We tried changing diets, tried eating like more plants and whatever. It's trying to trigger it.
Okay.
Nothing seems to change. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you very much, Najman.
Well, I can appreciate the dilemma in this situation. What we're dealing with in this situation in the scientific term is called urticaria, or we call it hives, or in Bahasa it's like gegata, gatal-gatal. And in Chinese it's feng mo or feng mo. Basically,
very upset you didn't give me the Tamil version.
You got to tell me about that. What's the Tamil version?
You are the last person you should be asking. go ahead.
So what happens is this. It looks like a allergic reaction, but it's not. Okay, let me explain a little bit in this situation. When you have hives, your skin, there's these cells in your skin called mast cells, and they're releasing this histamine. You get the same reaction if you got bitten by an ant or a mosquito. You get an itchy bite, little bumps all over where they bite you, except that this is all over the body and is extremely distressing to the patient and is extremely itchy. If it's severe, you get what we call angioedema. That means you get swelling. Sometimes the areas around the eyes get swollen, the lips get swollen, and even more severe, you get what we call asthma attack. So this is what we call urticaria. And it's nothing to do with the environment. It's nothing to do with what you've eaten. It's nothing to do with your bed sheets or detergent. It's something that's triggered your immune system. If you had it for less than 4 weeks, it's most likely a viral infection, inadequate sleep, stress, something that has activated your immune system to respond in such a way. If it's more than 6 weeks, we call it chronic urticaria, and you have to look for other triggers, infectious triggers, autoimmune triggers, hormonal triggers. So in our listener who called in with the question, his wife has been having it for less than 6 weeks, so we call it acute urticaria. And it also came in during the fasting month. So I would assume there's a pretty stressful situation. And during stressful situations like this, your immune system overreacts. The recommendations for this is usually to take the antihistamine constantly. So if you take the antihistamine, like what our listener said, it goes away in 30 minutes. And then it usually gets better. And then in a few days, it comes back again. So what you want to do is you want to reset the immune system. You take these antihistamines daily without stopping for 2 weeks. Of course, in this situation, please see a doctor. Don't do it by yourself. See a doctor and he'll say, yes, it's a hives. We'll give you medicines for 2 weeks and please take it for 2 weeks like the doctor instructed. Don't be like, I took it for 3 days. I'm better now. The reason why you need to take it for 2 weeks is because you need time for your immune system to reset itself, to go to what we call normal state. If after the 2 weeks, it doesn't get better, that is when we need to do some further investigation. That's when you need to see the specialist.
Okay, fantastic. Hope that helps, Najman. We have Lenny on the line. Lenny?
Hello.
Hi, good doctor. Afternoon, Lenny.
Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Right, I actually have a question with regards to allergies. So I, when I was very young, I actually had an allergy for dust mites, right, which is the most common allergy in Malaysia. Right, and it was pretty severe to me that at times I really have to, I have like an asthma attack and all that. Then somewhere along my young adult time, I developed into something far more worse, which was an allergic to wheat. Right, so I got this confirmation by going to a specialist and they did an allergy test, and wheat was top, second was dust. Right. So, and the symptom was I had a lot of itch on my thighs, and it was starting to have some outbreaks as well. So that became very, very difficult. So what the doctor told me at that point of time was to stay away from all this, which I did. And over time, it just went away, totally disappeared.
Both so the wheat itch. And the dust allergy?
The dust allergy actually became so much better, but the wheat just went away.
Okay. Do you know what kind of test was done? Was it like a blood test or was it like a skin test or the wheat allergy?
It was a blood test.
Do you know what the results were?
It was many years back, so okay. I can't really remember though.
Okay, but it was very high, is that correct?
Yeah, it was very, very high, yeah.
Have you ever done any tests on the wheat allergy before? Or this was the first time?
This was the first time and the only time, yeah.
Okay. And you were eating wheat? No problems?
No problems before that. Yeah.
And you're eating... And you're eating that now, no problems?
No problem at all.
Okay. Okay.
Even my dust allergies has become so much more better. I'm more tolerant to dust now.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you very much, Lenny. That's a very... encouraging.
Yes, that is very encouraging indeed.
Sharing of experience.
Yes, yes. And I like to thank him for calling in. There's one thing interesting about food allergy testing. If you get tested positive to a food allergen, doesn't automatically mean that you're allergic to it. That is the trick about the food allergy diagnosis. You gotta have a positive test, and you gotta have a good history, clinical history, that you're reacting to wheat. So for example, let's say you have a blood test that say you're wheat allergic, and every time you take wheat, you'll break out in a rash, or you become nauseated, and you started having diarrhea, or you're having vomiting, or you're having a severe allergic reaction to wheat, then yes. But if you get tested to positive to wheat, but you were eating wheat all this while without any issues, then not necessarily that might be the contribution to your allergy symptoms. What happened in this situation is like this. Our immune system, for whatever reason, can throw out the allergic antibodies. But there are counteracting mechanisms in play here. So in this situation, you would test it positive to wheat, but you have counteracting measures, the tolerant-inducing mechanisms to kind of counterbalance this allergic reaction. Maybe at that point in time, the immune system was not balanced. And that's why he was reacting to wheat and with the dust mites. And over time, for whatever reason, which we still don't know, he's managed to overcome this situation. Maybe it was a particularly stressful time in his life. Maybe that has changed. Maybe he's eating healthier now, he's exercising, things that he's doing to further balance the immune system. So all I can say is I'm not sure what actually happened, but I congratulate him. Yes. And this is very, very optimistic from his sharing of his experience.
So what you're saying is if you do all the right things like exercise and eating right and all of that, it
absolutely
helps?
Absolutely.
It really helps?
Absolutely. Everyone does not believe me. It's like, oh, well, doctor, what can I do? I say, eat right, exercise, eat your veggies, avoid junk food. But I know that. But are you doing it? That's the key. You got to know and do it. That makes the difference. Everyone knows this, but you got to do it. It makes a difference.
So we have a question here of somebody who has an allergy reaction to her sweat. Perspiration. Is that possible?
Yes, that's actually very, very possible indeed. It's what we call cholinergic urticaria. And when you exercise or when you get nervous or you get excited, your body produces sweat. A cold sweat is when you get nervous or you get afraid. And your body is reacting to a component in the sweat and makes you itchy. And it can happen with your exercise or in a sauna or you feel hot. That usually goes away on its own over time. For patients that have this for a long, long time, there's a very interesting procedure that can be done. It's called sweat desensitization. And what you have, and I've done it, by the way.
That just sounds bizarre.
Yes,
that you have to desensitize yourself
to the sweat.
To your own sweat.
Yes. This particular patient of mine has been suffering with this for about 5 years, and there was no relief with medications, and it came to me out of sheer desperation. And we tried, and I said, well, give it a shot. We'll use medicines first to see if it makes a difference, and sure enough, it doesn't work. And so I said, we have this procedure called sweat desensitization. Are you interested? And he said, doctor, I would do anything possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what does the procedure entail? Essentially, you have to force yourself into a hot environment. For him, he went to a sauna and he had a cup and he collected all the sweat that dripped. And he collected all this sweat into this cup and he brought it in. And then I took the sweat and then I started processing it and diluting it into different concentrations from very, very dilute all the way to its normal concentrated state. And what I did was every week he will come in and I will inject a small bit of portion of that sweat into his skin.
Back into his skin.
Yes, back into his skin. I form a small little bleb, a little bit of
the one
sweat
that you diluted.
Yes, the one I diluted. So I diluted it about 10,000 times. And then after 1 month, it went to 1,000 times and then 100 times until we got it like 1:1. That means the original concentrated sweat. And we did that for a period of about 1 year. And then we stopped. And then we waited to see what happened. And lo and behold, it all went away.
After how long?
after that 1 year of a sweat injection. It was once a week, and then after that it was once a month. And then after that, after 1 year, we stopped, and then he said, "Doc, I am cured. Thank you very much."
So what actually happened there? So you kept putting back
the sweat
for the system to recognize as a friend.
Yes, sort of what we call the immunotherapy, yes, if you will, except it's towards its own sweat.
Interesting. And, you know, but when you do that,
yes,
I'm just wondering, how did he collect the sweat?
Well, he went into
how much can you collect?
Oh, he collected quite a lot. You'll be surprised. You sweat a lot. And he was in the sauna for a long time to collect
the sauna
sweat.
Can be done. Of course, I forgot about that. I was just trying to imagine someone on the treadmill trying to collect their sweat.
He took the easy way out.
Work.
He went in the sauna.
Okay, there you go. Fantastic. We don't have very much time, but very quickly, Dr. Ken, we have one question here from Ng. And he says he's been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes for the last 8 years and has been allergic to penicillin, paracetamol and NSAIDs. And over the last 3 years, he's been suffering from skin allergies with itch and, you know, skin puffs, but disappears overnight. Now, his sister has rheumatoid arthritis and his mum passed away from scleroderma,
yes,
which are both autoimmune diseases.
Yes.
So Ng is wondering, are Ng's symptoms caused by an autoimmune disease as well?
Okay, I'm going to address this step by step because I think this is quite important for listeners. He was diagnosed with allergies to penicillin, paracetamol, and NSAIDs. So what I want to comment first is on the penicillin allergy. And this is an important point. When you're allergic to penicillin, what the data shows is it's not forever. So after 10 years where you have been avoiding penicillin, there's an 80% chance that you have outgrown the penicillin allergy and you can take penicillin again. So just because you had a reaction 20, 30 years ago doesn't mean that penicillin is off the books for you. You might have outgrown that. Second is when you're allergic to paracetamol and NSAIDs, it's actually related to his condition where he's having these itchy bumps. This itchy bumps that comes on and off is what we call hives or urticaria, which another listener called in. He's having what we call chronic urticaria. And he's been having this for quite a while. And he's got a strong family history of autoimmune disease. Autoimmune diseases can cause his hives. So in this situation for our listener, I would recommend that you get evaluated for autoimmune condition. And one of the causes early presentation of autoimmune condition is hives. And when you get the proper diagnosis, you can actually prevent it from getting worse. So my advice is, yes, it is related to what he was suspected along his family history of autoimmune disease. He should get evaluated.
Okay. You know, Dr. Ken, allergy testing seems to be still problematic. There are some tests that have, you know, come out with unproven tests, results and all of that. What's your take on this? I mean, if tomorrow we want to go and get ourselves tested, where do we even start?
Okay. Yes, that is a very, very valid point. Because of the rapid rise of allergies, there's a strong demand for testing, and not all tests are actually valid or proper testing. Some of them are actually non-validated. It's not really helpful. So before you go for any allergy testing, please do your medical reading and go do it at reputable sites. I'll list some sites. One is the American Academy of Allergy, so you can Google that. The other one is the American College of Allergy. There's the Australian Society of Allergy. There's the Malaysian Society of Allergy Immunology. There's the European Academy of Allergy and Immunology. You go to these proper sites, and all these sites, we will tell you what is the proper testing and diagnostic techniques and laboratories that are approved and validated for allergy diagnosis. Don't just go into an internet, order an online kit, get it done, take your hair, send it in, and then they tell you you're allergic to tens or thousands of different things. That doesn't work. You need to get proper evaluation with a doctor. Don't be your doctor. Go find a good doctor that will guide you properly.
While we're on that topic, very quickly, we don't have very many immunologists in this country now, do we?
Yes, that is an issue that we are trying to address. I think we need to get more trained immunologists, and we need to have the government help in setting up training centers for immunologists so that we can help all our Malaysian citizens. We have abandoned the field of allergy for far too long, and it's right here on our face, in our shores. We need to address this early before it becomes an epidemic.
I'm sure. 1 in 5 with allergic rhinitis, esophagus allergies. Oh my God, I've never heard of that one. We haven't even gone into the food. There's so many questions. Thank you all for calling and for your WhatsApp messages. We are unable to answer all of them. All I can say is, Dr. Ken, we'll have to come back and attempt this same topic again so we can answer more of your questions.
I'll be glad to come back.
Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Ken Wu, consultant allergist and immunologist, in our open clinic segment today on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.